Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. You know, so over the last few weeks and the last few episodes, I'm hoping you've been sensing a theme, right? There have been so many attacks on DEI and the work that we do. And I really wanted to use this season and use this platform to talk about how do we continue to move forward in this work? Because the work's not going anywhere, right? The need is not going anywhere. And so in order for us to continue to move the work forward, we have to build community. We have to look at partnerships. And so my guest today is Sabrina Townsend, who is a Global Director of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging for WWT. And I'll have Sabrina come on and give her background and how she got into this work so we can talk about how do you continue to move this forward within an organization? So Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sasha. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here. I've been following you for a while now, so really excited to be here. So I fell into this work, and I say fell into because there was not a traditional major for this particular work. But I started my career as a psychologist. I've been a clinician for more than 25 years. I've worked in various levels of care and healthcare. And probably during the pandemic, I decided it was time to make a pivot. This particular work in healthcare really was a part of my everyday job, but it was not carved out exclusively. And I think like many of us during the pandemic, I decided, how else can I give myself to other people, to the work, to my passions in general. So that's when I decided to kind of carve out on my own a little bit, tried that for a while, some consulting, some training, and then moved into back into a more corporate structure where I feel like my influence is a little bit greater. So that's how I got here.
Wow, thank you. You know, I'm real curious because I've had a number of psychologists, therapists come onto the show, and they're really looking at it. Actually, some of them are looking at this work from that clinician standpoint. Mm-hmm. And the more and more I talk to them and just kind of understand, it is so intricately tied together, right? Mm-hmm. It is understanding behaviors. It's understanding triggers also, you know, to mm-hmm. some extent. How have you been able to kind of dovetail your background into the work that you're doing today?
So I would say, you know, what you described is a really accurate picture. But I think, you know, organizational health is just like our personal mental health in so many ways, mm-hmm. in the sense that organizations oftentimes, you know, they get sick like mm-hmm. we do. And with that, behaviors and practices come about that don't necessarily make or the most healthy environment to work. Many times toxic behaviors show up in the workplace because where there's people, there's going to be challenges. Yep. So I think that I look at it from the perspective of really how can we look at serving an entire organization with tips and tools that we would do even for individuals, because we're just a larger group of individuals. So it's more of a collective approach sometimes to the lack of wellness. I think that shows up in organizations sometimes.
I love that. You know, so at the top, I talked about this current, it's not even just a recent thing, because I've been talking about this for about a year now. the attacks on this work, attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how some organizations are taking the stance of we're 10 toes down, we're moving forward, we're not going to let this hinder us. While others are a little bit more timid, they're pulling back their resources, they're fearful of litigation, they're fearful of the unknown, you know, all of these things that are happening. Talk to me a bit about, you know, your organization is moving forward in this space and in this work? And what are some of the ways that you all are being intentional about that?
I think definitely what you described really speaks to, there is a variety of approaches to this work. And I think for our organization, having a founder who was really committed to making sure that access and opportunity was available for people that were not traditionally found in technology. You know, we have Dave Stewart is our founder. And, you know, as a Black man in the 80s trying to start a technology business, it wasn't very easy. So I think, you know, continuing to support his efforts, our current administration's efforts in really realizing that if he had given up or had been deterred by the climate, we wouldn't be who we are today. So I think we're absolutely 10 toes down, moving forward, very committed to this work. Our CEO, Jim Cavanaugh, and his executive team have more than put forth both not only the effort and mindset, but really in the financial backing as well. We have a team of people to support this work. And like anything, I think, you know, there's always more to be done and you have to be mindful of the climate that we're in. So are we raising our hands to be, you know, sued and on Front Street? Absolutely not. But at the same time, are we committed to our employees, our customers, and all of that as far as making this a priority? Absolutely.
You know, there are two things that you said that really stood out for me. And I think it's important for our listeners and, you know, anyone that's kind of doing this work to hear. One is resource allocation. Having not just the funds, but the staff to be able to do and execute the work and being committed in that way. The other thing that you said that I think, and this is just, you know, my take on this, having done this work for several years, is you mentioned not just the staff, but your clients. And I think so many organizations think about DEI work just from that HR perspective, and they're only focused on their employees and recruitment and retention, but they forget about their clients. They forget about the impact that they could have in this work in the industry. As well. And so, you know, I was in tech for 10 years. I know the disparities that are there and the number of women and men of color, and I'll broadly say of color, or with, you know, with disabilities or underrepresented in other ways, those numbers are dismal. And so, you know, what I hear you saying is the work that we do is important for our employees, but it's also impacting how we're showing up in the industry and what's important to us. And you're talking about the values of the organization as well in the work. So talk to me a little bit about how do you get the work done through like those internal channels, right? Because there's often people or organizations where it's someone in your role or your team are the only ones responsible for getting this work done, right? What are some of the things that you do to help disperse the workload?
Well, I would start by saying that we absolutely have to bust the myth of this work just applies to the team that carries the title that does it. This work does not happen without everyone's engagement. And I think one of the things that I'm most proud of about the organization that I serve at is that we have something for everybody. So we have, you know, business resource groups that really touch every aspect of the organizations. They're led by executive sponsors who are a member of our executive team, all the way down to members are open across the business to participate, whether you, quote unquote, subscribe to whatever the focus is of that business resource group. We also hold listening sessions, and that's an opportunity for our executive team to be available to talk to our employees directly about some of those hard questions, about what it means to be a leader, you know, transitioning from maybe individual contributor to leader to psychological safety. I mean, we cover a lot of gamuts of topics that really, I think anybody that's leading in this day and age is facing at this point.
Well, you know, you touched on two of my favorite topics, right? So like the psychological safety piece of it. But then also probably within the last month or two, I've really been focusing on first-time people leaders, right? Exactly what you're talking about, because one, hardly anyone, if anyone, is trained to be a people leader, right? You get promoted and it's just like, go figure this out on your own. At least that was my experience. And so it's that, but then you're dealing with the post-pandemic workplace, which is very different than pre-pandemic. You're dealing with now social unrest is now part of what's happening in organizations as well. And so as a leader, how do you manage and deal with those things? And so I think it's so important that you have those resources available to the staff, because DEI work is more than just a workshop here or, you know, unconscious bias, this. It's so much more. It's how we're showing up and how we are supporting each other in our success, because that is what makes the organization move forward successfully. How are they focusing on kind of moving forward right now? The reason I asked that question is I was recently talking to someone about their BRGs, and they were, you know, saying that there was just a lot of uneasiness, because even though they were in these positions to lead these groups, they had the support of the organization, there was still some leeriness, right? There was still some, I see what's happening. We're in a political season right now. You know, there's just some unease. And so how do you make sure that the folks that are volunteering for the most part for these roles stay committed and keep their eye on the prize?
You know, I think it's not easy to really speak candidly about it. Because again, all of the people that are participating in these business resource groups, you know, they're experiencing everyday life like everyone else is. So a part of our belonging, you know, focus is about bringing your whole self to work and really feeling comfortable and confident in being who you are. And let's be clear, turn on the news and most people don't feel that great when they cut it off. So to then show up to work the next day and have to go on like nothing has happened or like you haven't observed anything is, I think, pretty, how can I say it other than it just doesn't happen anymore. I think you just, it's very hard not to. You spend, you know, 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours a day with people. Eventually, how you really feel about something is probably going to come out. So one of the ways that our business resource groups has, one of the efforts that they have put forth is providing regular, just kind of happy hour, we call it that. But really it's a time to just chat, get things off your chest. It's less formal, no agenda, but people just bring things to the table that they're experiencing. I'll tell you, we had an experience last year where there were some legislative changes that were happening that were really challenging for one of our populations. And instead of just letting it ride or slide, we, you know, opened up an opportunity to really discuss the efforts, you know, what our position was going to be. And really our leader faced it head on in saying, hey, let's talk about this. What are our options here? What kind of support can we provide these employees who may be facing things that are really challenging that will affect their ability to come to work and be productive? So that's one of the things that I think we try best to do with that particular effort, is to allow spaces and places for people to talk through things, even if at the moment, maybe there's nothing that we can do as a company about it, but just to be able to let it out, I think is really significant from probably the workplace I entered 30 years ago. Definitely.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's so key that a leader, you know, you mentioned that there was a leader that was like, hey, we need to have this conversation, because so many leaders, and I, you know, I see this all the time, avoid it, right? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And so therefore I'm going to avoid it and act like it's not happening, which causes more harm. And so what I love about what you said was, it's almost like, let's show up just perfectly imperfect and figure this out together and talk through this. And, you know, if we don't have a response to you, at least we're having the dialogue so that we can come up with the response. And that response, maybe we can't do anything, right? But at least you're having that communication. And I think that that is so important right now is that transparency. It's that doing the activities that build trust, right? You can't just say, oh, we're a trustworthy organization. You have to do the things in order for people to feel like they can trust you. So I love that example because I think that more organizations, more leaders need to take those bold, courageous steps. And so how, let's say, okay, you have a leader that wants to take the bold step, but is afraid to put that one foot in front of the other, right? How do you encourage that? Like, how do you support them when it's hard?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where our team that's really specially focused in this area can be a resource or an asset. You know, we've sat down with leaders and come up with questions. We have, you know, given potential answers if they really didn't have any clue about it. Because sometimes if things are not impacting you directly, you very well may not know how to respond to those things. But remember, our ears are to the ground and it's our job to hear the voice of the employee and the customer. So that's where we provide that. And I hate to say it, but I can't think of a better way to say it, consultative role, where we're able to provide that for leaders. And in all transparency, you know, our executives, I think, and they probably wouldn't agree, but they have it a little easier. But I think it's those floor supervisors that are in it every day that are probably more challenged because they can't go away. So they may be working side by side with an individual who is having a significant reaction to something that may be going on, and they may want to stop what they're doing and address it right then. So one of the things we've tried to do is to support our leaders that are a little bit lower level in the organization with, you know, various tools and tips to address people in the moment when things are happening and when emotions are high, frankly, because for some of these things, I mean, it's a very, this work is very emotional. And before, you know, like I said, 30 years ago, it was kind of a get back to work and we don't want to hear about your personal things that may be going on personally. I think in this day and age, you know, I'm grateful that the workplace has moved away from that. Because I think we lost probably a lot of people too that may have been very successful in the workplace because of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of that post-pandemic workforce, right? Workplace. That line that was, you know, personal stays at home and work is at work. It's all together now, right? Yep. And I don't think that can be disentangled. And so you're starting to see that people aren't saying I'm fully showing up, and what impacts me outside of the workplace impacts me inside the workplace. And I totally agree, like those middle managers are the front lines. Like they are the ones that are hearing the mandate from up top, but they're also hearing and seeing the day to day. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, I just don't even know what to say or do. And so, you know, providing them, I love that you're providing them with tools and resources and potential responses and questions. You know, all of those things are so important because now they feel probably a little bit more empowered to respond or even say, you know what, I don't know, but I can go find out, right? Let me find out for you. And I think that that's part of, again, building that trust, building that environment of psychological safety where people don't feel as if they're thrown to the wayside and have to, you know, figure it out how to survive on their own. So, you know, I appreciate that. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, when we were prepping for this, you were talking about just finding other practitioners and able to do this work. And why is that so important? Like the connection with other folks that are doing this.
Well, I think, Sasha, it's essential because of what I said earlier. This work is very hard. It's very emotional. It can be very stressful. And honestly, there's a lot of people that simply don't get it. If this is not your focus or your effort or your passion, people don't understand what the big deal is. You know, just go to work, get your check and come home. But this is hard work. So I think having access to communities of other people that are doing this work. You know, sometimes it's simply a phone call like, can you believe that this person said this today? Or, you know, are you serious? Like, I put in a request to do this and it was met with all of this, you know, attitude, for lack of a better way to say it, or, you know, someone agreed to do something and now they've changed their mind and now the audience is disappointed. I mean, you know, honestly, support in the workplace, I think, is essential for any position, but especially this kind of work. You got to have folks in your tribe. That's how I like to describe it, who really, you know, they get the culture of the work. They get, you know, the organizational challenges, especially if you work in a larger corporate setting. But even if you're in a smaller, you know, nonprofit setting, you know, to have people that are in that work that understand the culture of the work, I think just helps. And then honestly, spreading ideas, because, you know, you may have tried something in your organization that worked really well that I never thought of. So,
yeah,
to have that as well.
I was chuckling because you just described how this podcast came to be, right? Like, it literally was a group of us, or actually a couple of us. Anytime that I was in Seattle when I was traveling, I was like, okay, what are you doing after five?
Yep.
Okay. You know what I mean, right? We had like a secret place that we would meet. And, you know, it was community. It was brainstorming. It was, let me get this off my chest because you will understand. And you know, I'm just fighting this battle over here. It was also, and you touched on this too, not even sharing ideas that other people may have, but also understanding and leveraging allies in the workplace in different ways. I had a colleague who was a white male that I knew if it came from me, it would get all kinds of backlash. And so I would, hey, can you talk about this and do that? And he would do it. And, oh, that's the best idea I ever heard. And he would be mad because he's like, why does it have to come from me? But at the same time, it's, you know, also understanding how to navigate some of these places and spaces. And you get that in community.
Absolutely. I just have a quick example to share. I got my doctorate from Temple University, and at the time there were really small cohorts, like 10 students they would admit at a time. And the majority of the students typically were not obviously Black women. So we developed a system that we nicknamed the Underground Railroad. And really what the Underground Railroad was about was passing notes to one another about, you know, if there were teachers, things to kind of watch out for, if there were certain assignments that may be really difficult, you know, giving people resources like, hey, you know, it's going to be hard to find in the library, but if you go to Penn's library, they have what you need. You know, here's an example of, you know, some of the things this teacher really doesn't like this. If you do this kind of presentation, they're going to grade you harder, you know, but they really kind of gave us those tips and tools to help get through a very labor, you know, intensive process, which is finishing your doctorate. Shout out to what I call the less than 1%, which are people that look like me that have doctorates. So with that, you know, that to me, I think helped inform some of the work that I do today, is how can we create these safe spaces that people can utilize one another for resources to help get them through.
I love that. My coach, the first coach that I had in doing this work, I used to call her Harriet Tubman, because like, you're like the corporate Harriet Tubman, right? Like, you have this Underground Railroad to just pull us out of these toxic environments. And so, I, you know, when you're talking about that, it just reminded me, we had a similar thing in undergrad where, you know, it was test banks and, you know, you knew which classes to take when. And we also wanted to not be the only in class. And so it was like, okay, who's about to take this class? And you could see who part of that was part of that community. So we could take classes together as much as we could and support each other. And exactly what you said, it's the same, it's a similar thing in the workplace. Like, we still hold on to a lot of those community ideals, for the most part. Some folks.
One thing I would just add too, Sasha, is that, you know, this is not a new approach. I mean, if you think about what happens on the golf course, if you think about what happens when people come together for those happy hours after work, you know, people that, you know, maybe bring the next generation of people into the workplace behind them, they've laid the path ahead to help their son or daughter move into that. It's just, you know, it looks different. The spaces may look slightly different, but it's the same concept. Let me give you the tips and tools to make it through.
Absolutely. Right. And so no one questions those, but they question why the Black kids sit together in the cafeteria.
Yes, exactly.
But that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A whole other conversation for another day. But, you know, I appreciate pulling it together that way, right? These are things that we do naturally in community, regardless of the community. And so it's making sure that there are those safe spaces that you can do that. But then also, you know, one of the things that I think about in this work is that is so important, but we also need to be mindful of like, what are some of the barriers that can be removed, right? That we can start to peel away so that there's the dependence on those communities is not for survival, but really just to be in community, right? And I think that's part of the goal of this is to remove those barriers and provide support in ways that it's not truly about survival skills that you're trying to push through. So I want to do a little bit of a pivot and ask you, like, what are the things that you do to kind of take care of yourself and fill your cup as you're doing this work? Because you said it's hard.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, I don't think people, no matter what they tell you, it's hard to be warned about what you're going to experience. So I think definitely I am all about therapy. Surprise, surprise. I do have a regular psychotherapist that I do see. I do have a community of practitioners, DEIB practitioners, that I meet with quarterly for lunch. I have some people that are in my fast Rolodex that I literally call on in case of emergency. They know when my call comes through, they better answer. But I also do a lot of reading. You know, I read on LinkedIn. I follow a lot of the major and minor practitioners, people that are doing the work, that are telling their stories. I try to ingest a lot of positivity, the folks that are doing it and getting it right. But then I also take that time to grieve. I try to get some sleep. I love tea and coffee. So I try to get me a good, you know, cup of coffee in the morning to get the party started and maybe a good cup of tea at night to wind it down. My focus this year, Sasha, is about having more fun, because I noticed that when I have more fun, then my balance at work is better. So that is really kind of my focus this year is just having more fun.
So tell us one thing that you're going to do for fun.
Well, I'm going to a basketball game on Saturday. African-American Heritage Night for the Dallas Mavericks. So I am a proud graduate of an HBCU. Shout out to Clark Atlanta University. So I will happily be wearing my swag and, you know, just having some fun with my FAMU folks that I'm going with and, you know, just having that time to dance and hear some music. And I'm not necessarily sorry, Mavericks. I'm not a Dallas fan necessarily, but I live here. So, you know. Right, exactly. As long as it's not the Cowboys, I will not support them. But sorry, but the Mavericks, you know, I do like Jason Kidd, who's the coach. But so I'll get out and support them. And in between that, I have a friend that I'm accountable to that once a month we must have an outing that is fun. So we're planning already for February what it's going to be. So we have some ideas. It could be a place to hear live music or a comedy show or something like that. But definitely try to plan something at least once a month. And I mean, those sisters hold me to it. Like, oh, what are you doing? What is it? So
I love it. So I love it. So I'm going to call you Dr. Sabrina. If someone wanted to get in contact with you, right, learn more about what you all are doing or just, you know, connect, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would say send an email to me directly. I'll give you my personal email, which is on the screen. And I say that just because, remember, this is DEI After Dark. So sometimes we want to talk about things that are personal. So that's why I'm giving you my personal contact. I also have a podcast as well. So She's Always Right, He's Never Wrong. That's myself and a fellow psychologist colleague of mine, where we really have fun talking about, you know, relationship issues, politics, and everything in between. So we do that as well. But I would say either way is the best way to contact me. Friend me on LinkedIn. I am on there as well. So I'm happy to set up virtual coffees. That's also my way to connect with others in this work.
Wonderful. Dr. Sabrina, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, I think that this is a great conversation in highlighting and showing what an organization is doing that is moving this forward, is not being hindered by the foolishness that's out there.
Absolutely.
Right now. And so it's a breath of fresh air to see and talk to someone that is really remaining steadfast in this work. So thank you for the work you do. And thank you for joining us today.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us this week for this week's episode of DEI After Five. I hope you were able to walk away with a few nuggets or ideas that you can use in your organization to continue moving this work forward. Tune in every week at Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And until next time, have a good one.